Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host for the day, Anthony Wood, and with me today is the Dave Damashek himself. Dave, thank you very much for joining me. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. What's happening? Where are you calling from?
I'm down in Texas at the moment. I'm up in Dallas, however. No, not in H-Town itself.
Ah, what do you like better? I know that you have to answer a certain way, but how do you find the two cities?
That's difficult. If I say H-Town, I'll make all the fans happy. If I say Dallas, I'll make my in-laws all happy. So I don't know. They're both great. I'll stick with that.
All right, fine. If that's how it's going to go, I see how it's going to be. So be it.
So let's start off with Houston's offseason so far. How do you think they've done so far in terms of free agency and the draft?
Well, I always say a couple of caveats about the offensive line and addressing that primarily more than anything else in free agency and in the draft. It's not fun, you know. It's not splashy. It's not getting Odell Beckham or Antonio Brown or Le'Veon Bell or a big name quarterback or anything else. But I don't have to tell any Texans fan that this is an issue that is not 3 games or 3 months old. This has been a plague for multiple seasons now and has really limited how far they can go. And, you know, Deshaun Watson, clearly we can see, anybody with two eyes and any knowledge of football can see that he's a special talent and can to some degree offset a crummy offensive line, sack totals notwithstanding. You know, there are certain guys, Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Roethlisberger, who have during stretches of their careers thrived behind subpar offensive lines. And so too did Deshaun Watson last year, but ultimately not just for the health of the young guy, but, you know, to have some sustained success in the NFL. That is it, as unsexy as it is just about mandatory. If you really go through it, you hear all the platitudes, especially in the off season, about what you need to be a championship level team. And once people stop talking and have listed off 3 dozen things that you must have to win a Super Bowl, what you'll realize is some of those things aren't actually essential, but what is the ability to more or less control both lines of scrimmage. And so I think that what the Texans have done may not be the most exciting or splashy thing for the Texans fans, but surely the savvy ones understand the importance of what they've done here, especially in a defense-first division like the AFC South.
Yes, and I must admit, your use of the word unsexy, I think, is the perfect adjective. I've never heard anyone use that before in this term, but it fits perfectly. It wasn't exactly a, like you mentioned, an OBJ. It wasn't a big, flashy wide receiver running back group. But they did what they had to do. They brought in what they needed to do to solidify the offensive line and the secondary as well. So fingers crossed it works out for them. So do you think they've solved their issues in these two units in particular with the players they've brought in?
Again, the other caveat that I wanted to provide, as a matter of fact, regarding offensive linemen specifically in the secondary, yes, but I will say that specific to offensive linemen, I am not so pretentious that I would claim to understand fully why one 300-pound man is more adept at leaning up on other large human beings than other ones are, because they do cut very similar figures to the naked eye. You know, like, well,
yes,
that's, yeah, you want a 300-pound guy who's kind of muscly, kind of appears to be a little overweight there. Yeah, that's what we want in our offensive linemen. I can't divine who ultimately is going to be really good at doing it over the long term. Titus Howard, by all accounts, by the people who are smarter than I when it comes to evaluating who can make it at the NFL level at offensive line, seemed very high on Titus Howard. And so I think that at minimum, he's a good one. And the double down first and third round to address that tackle spot, like I say, announces a certain commitment to fixing up what's been a weak spot so long. And by the way, as a side note, I will say from afar, I'm completely objective where the Texans are concerned, I think Bill O'Brien deserves a little more credit than what he's gotten. He surely at this point, the bar is low, but nevertheless, he looms as the most successful member of the Belichick coaching tree at this point. You know, there's really not a close second to that. He's succeeded, and he's had in some wonky years with some wonky quarterbacks. He's been able to pull through division titles, and, you know, it figures to be a very rugged AFC South this year. I don't know. I mean, with the possible exception, I guess, of the Jags staying down where they were a year ago, if Nick Foles can't thrive outside of that dark green jersey and make it in the teal green jersey of the Jags. I mean, I don't know that the I don't see much fallback for the Colts. In fact, I think they're improved, and I suspect that the Jags get a little bit closer to form. And a team that is also very quiet is are the Titans. They have some really nice defensive pieces there. So the bottom line is, it's a very tough division, but I really do continue to like Bill O'Brien and the stability of that. That's a quiet thing too. You don't want stability for stability's sake, because the Cleveland Browns have proven consistency by itself is not necessarily a good thing. You don't want to always be, but the Texans have quietly been a factor in the AFC for pretty much the entirety of Bill O'Brien's tenure there. And I see no reason with Deshaun Watson, who ought to get even better this year, I think, and kept a little cleaner. And with the weapons that he has and with the defensive pieces that you guys have, I would be surprised if you guys aren't a factor once again in at least the division hunt.
Yes, I completely agree, though, about the obviously the division rivals all having improved. The Titans went very defense heavy in the draft and free agency, and obviously they fixed a couple of holes on offensive line as well. Look at Roger Saffold coming in. The Colts, again, I mean, they've got arguably one of the best defensive lines in football, I'd say, up there with the Rams and the Patriots. So they've got a fantastic line there. My question is, if you look at the players that the Texans were linked with over the course of the last couple of months, Le'Veon Bell, Trent Brown, they were linked at one point to Chris Harris and Patrick Peterson. Do you think they made a mistake by not bringing in one of these sort of marquee names?
Five years ago, I would have said absolutely not, because there was little evidence in the free agency era that you could win the Super Bowl or win a spot in the Super Bowl by winning free agency. But, you know, the Patriots, when they got Darrelle Revis, that was the X factor for them returning to the victory stand at the Super Bowl. And then in 2015, the Broncos went out and filled some holes with some big time stars too. I think what we've learned is that there are now different ways to skin the cat at minimum. You know, you don't have to play free agency and make splashy moves in order to be playing in January, but it also doesn't prohibit that. So I guess I'm being a little wishy-washy with you with my answer there. I mean, listen, Le'Veon Bell would make your team better. Chris Harris Jr. would make your team better. So to the extent that, you know, they missed out on a guy who is a high-end player, sure, they would be better off having gotten one of those guys. But, you know, you take your shot, and if it doesn't work out, you move on. It doesn't sound like it was from a lack of desire to try and make something happen. And ultimately, I think that the Bell contract, I mean, as we see, the early signs are is that things are getting sideways up there, and they probably overpaid a little bit to get him. I you know, specifically Chris Harris Jr. with what he wound up with, a one-year deal to go back to Denver, maybe that's the area. Maybe that's the individual I would point at and say maybe they could have taken a stronger run at him.
Yeah, well, one of the players that they've particularly been linked with the last couple of weeks because of everything that's been going on with him is Patrick Peterson up in Arizona. I know he's still obviously tied down there to his contract, but with his suspension coming up and with some rumors of a rift having gone on around there, do you think that this is the perfect time for the Texans to go after someone like him, or do you think they should rely on the rookies that they brought in at corner and then the couple of one-year deals they brought in at corner as well?
Listen, again, I'm a pedigree snob, and so I am always about, I think the stories about guys who are unheralded who end up being relevant are nice, but generally speaking, load up with the guys who were the blue chip guys coming out of high school, who were the big time recruits when the draft was going on, drafts passed. If you can get a guy like Patrick Peterson, who obviously looms as one of the great cover corners of the last decade or so, and really a guy who seems to fit, or who would fit nicely in down there. If you can do something like that, I say go for it. You know, not to be wishy-washy, but you see the difference in the last, you know, in just this decade, with the difference in big ways that Darrell Revis goes to New England and makes, and then in my neck of the woods, in as a Steelers fan, late in training camp, just before the season starts, they added Joe Hayden, and he's made all the difference for an otherwise putrid secondary in Pittsburgh. So yes, I do think anytime you have the opportunity, unless it doesn't break the bank or completely corrupt the state of your roster otherwise, I think you do go and get a talent like that, because they don't come along very often.
Well, sticking with players with big pedigrees, what about Gerald McCoy? I know that he's obviously going to visit the Panthers now. He's been to visit the Browns and the Ravens as well. Do you think he's someone the Texans should chase after, perhaps?
I mean, imagine that. Imagine if you dropped him into that defensive front. To my earlier point, the teams, again, that get it done, and you kind of have to asterisk everything we've seen with the Patriots, because the rules don't apply to them. Whatever whatever voodoo they have worked this century is unique to them. And to your earlier question about going after a guy like Trent Brown, there's very little evidence that a guy who comes out of New England is going to have the same level of success on your team. There's just something different going on. So if we eliminate the Belichick Brady Patriots from the equation, I think that the teams that are not just making the playoffs, but are making deep playoff runs and getting to the playoffs. Look at the Rams last year. Look at the Eagles the year before that. The Seahawks when they were at their very best. The Broncos winning that Super Bowl. What they have in common, those Giants who vanquished those two Patriots teams, if we take a deeper dive in the decade, they control the lines of scrimmage. And specifically, you can offset a second-rate secondary if you can get after the QB. And you know, if you drop Gerald McCoy into what the Texans already have going, that's a terrifying thought with what that front seven would look like.
I have to agree with you there. I think it would be an amazing addition. I was a little bit on the fence at first, but after having some more time to actually watch back some clips of McCoy and have a really real big think about it, I mean, imagine him lining up next to Wanton Clowney. It'd be fantastic to watch. Speaking of Jadeveon Clowney, how do you see his contract situation ending up? There's talks of him most likely not turning up until week one, but apparently he will not be missing any games this season. What do you think is going to happen with his situation? Is he someone that they sign long term, or do they trade him away?
Well, you know, J.J. Watt, it's funny how the narrative can get away from you with certain things. Remember, a year ago, you know, I think the collective assumption about J.J. Watt was, well, he's pretty much done. I mean, he'll be out there. He's got the name brand, and it's not like he's not going to be in the starting lineup for the Texans, but his best days are clearly behind him. That was the rhetoric that most people were talking about. And in the moment, you kind of like, where does that come from? Like, how do you know? What are you, a doctor? How do you know what he's going to end up being? Now, that said, J.J. Watt is a little bit older than Jadeveon Clowney, and so what the long-term play is with J.J. Watt may impact how deep a dive the Texans want to take with Jadeveon Clowney long-term. But, of course, if you've watched Clowney these last couple of years, as he's kind of getting closer to putting that, I just can't get past the injuries. If not for the injuries, what a start. You see him when he's able to get out there consistently, how dominant he can be too. And as always, you know, talent is what wins. You do whatever you can to get Jadeveon Clowney, and at the same time, your capologists and personnel guys and coaching staff have to be disciplined enough to not break the bank to retain somebody. That's what the Patriots do so well, if it becomes unaffordable, then you unfortunately do have to move on. But I suspect that the Texans are wise enough to know that that they have something special in Clowney, and will do their best to try and hold on to him long term. And I don't think, and I think on a human level, it's vexing to fans of any team when your guy holds out and doesn't show up to practice and anything. But on a human level, wouldn't you do that? Wouldn't you not show up when practice involves running into other people on purpose? I would try and spare myself as few collisions as possible until it actually absolutely positively had to happen.
Well, that's why they do what I do, the job I do. I don't want to run into anyone, I must admit. So I completely see where you're coming from. But sticking with JJ Watt, obviously you mentioned him there, that everyone thought, is he done? Is his career over with? And obviously he came back last season, got 16.5 sacks. Fantastic year for him once again. What do you expect from him this season? How many sacks do you think he could potentially rack up?
Well, more of the same, I suppose, is the answer to that. You know, I mean, that's what's devastating about it. And it's not just in theory, but in practice as well. It's a devastating reality. I mean, it's not as though it's just those two guys either, in passing situations that must terrify QBs and offensive linemen. I mean, it's a terrifying proposition that, so what are we supposed to do here? Are we supposed to stop the one guy coming at the one tackle, or are we supposed to focus on the other? The answer is you're required to stop both. How do you do that? Good luck. I don't have the answer to that, you know. So I think optimally you keep both of those guys in there as long as you can. And, based on last season, you know, I guess if I'm trying to be glass half full about J.J. Watt, the injuries that have limited him in the last handful of seasons maybe have spared him some physical attrition that'll make him a little fresher than someone his age otherwise might be. I mean, that's the spin I'll put on it. But I am not going to, especially after everybody kind of threw a little bit of dirt on him a year ago, like I say, I'm not going to be the one who does that before 2019 gets going. I would expect him to be what he has been, which is one of the great defensive linemen of the 21st century.
I completely agree. I think he's been unbelievable since he got back. And I'm definitely hoping, as you mentioned, obviously there, that with these 2 years off almost that he had, I know obviously it wasn't that simple with the recovery and everything, but we can only hope that means he is fresher and perhaps extends his career, much like the way people are talking about Le'Veon Bell having had a year off. Does that mean he's fresher than other backs his age? We don't know yet. So it would be interesting to see what happens this year.
That's exactly right, and those sort of assumptions and narratives change over time. Remember, it wasn't, it wasn't 1980 that people were saying this. It was only, maybe 10 years or so ago. The assumption was that if you take a year off of football, you'll never be the same again. Now people have spun that in the opposite direction. Maybe it's because they saw Adrian Peterson bounce back from the knee injury and Jamal Charles in the same season, and both of those guys came back after early season injuries and were relatively fresh the following year, and they thrived. Maybe that's what turned everybody around and said, see, now they got fresh legs. And so those realities change when you get some human examples of them. I guess we'll see if it repeats itself and what that narrative will be based on the performance in 2019.
Definitely. I must admit, I much prefer this glass half full approach to predicting the season. It's much more optimistic than...
Well, I caution you because, I mean, this is the time to do it, but I always say, too, that, in May and June and this time of the year, it's way easier to be super optimistic about any team. I mean, really, think about it. What team do you know for certain, save, I guess, the Miami Dolphins, do you know has no chance this year? I mean, it's what makes the offseason of the NFL compelling more than any other sport, really, is that it's hard to make a pessimistic case for any team, or at least it's much harder to do that than it is to make a positive one, but that like I say, that being said, I am legitimately, I'm not doing it because I'm speaking with you. I do think the Texans look like a nice group for the coming season.
Absolutely. And if we stick with some more of Houston's stars, how good do you think DeAndre Hopkins is in terms of where does he rank among all NFL receivers? Do you have him at the top like some people do? Do you have him below others?
Yeah, it's such a tough one to do. And, you know, in a vacuum, people, when you bring up a name, and wide receiver is definitely one of those conversations where this will happen. If you just say to somebody in a vacuum, hey, what do you think about Julio Jones? People will too easily say, oh, best in football. But they will also say that about Nuke Hopkins, and they'll also say it about Keenan Allen, and they'll also say it about Devontae Adams and Antonio Brown, and some smarts will say, oh, no, it's A.J. Green. He just doesn't have a quarterback, and so on. As far as hands go, for just pure, you know, that's the primary requirement of someone playing that position. Hyperbolic as it sounds, I mean, he is up there with the best hands I've ever seen in football. I haven't seen very many human beings that catch the ball in tough spots and more acrobatically than Nuke Hopkins has since he got to the league. And he's, you know, he's devastating. And in the same way, I guess, in many of the same ways, at least, as Antonio Brown is. And to me, Antonio Brown was the gold standard for a number of years there. I say, speaking of hyperbole, I think that Antonio Brown, his last six seasons stand as the best run, unbroken consecutive run for a wide receiver in the Super Bowl era, including Jerry Rice or Calvin Johnson or anybody else that you want to point to. It's just a spectacular 6 years, although he's gotten a little loose with his route running. He got a little too dependent on the, I guess, ironically at this point, given the breakup with Roethlisberger. But I think he got to be a little too dependent on Roethlisberger's ability to read him playground style when he was altering routes mid-stride and expecting for Roethlisberger to be able to see what he was thinking. And I think he'll get a little bit of a wake-up call when he goes with Derek Carr, who likes to get the ball out of his hands quickly at all costs and doesn't extend plays in the way Roethlisberger does. So anyway, I would have said Antonio Brown 2 years ago. Love Julio Jones. I think Keenan Allen's awfully underrated, but I think it's fair to say, unless I'm forgetting somebody off the top of my head, that Nuke Hopkins is the best going in the NFL right now.
Personally, I certainly think he is, although I do agree it's very close at the top at this point in time.
There are who am I forgetting anybody?
Somebody
who I've left out?
You haven't mentioned OBJ.
Yeah. I didn't. You're right. No, I mean, listen, he was off to a historic start as well. And, I mean, you know, certainly seems to care about winning. I don't think he's as flaky as people seem to. I mean, I think his if there's a knock on him, it's that he's cared a little bit too much and let that get the better of him. I guess he has to be in the conversation, but you'd be hard pressed at this point, given the last 2 years, to say, oh yeah, Odell Beckham over Nuke Hopkins.
I'd agree with that.
Much more of Nuke Hopkins, and he's been far superior.
I think the only other names that people would potentially throw out there, I know a lot of people would probably throw Mike Evans in the mix, or Stephon Diggs, or Adam Thielen, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think between the Vikings guys, I would take Stephon Diggs. If you watch the flow of their games, it's pretty clear who's drawing the top corner. If the opponent decides to follow one or the other receiver around, and he draws the double coverage more consistently, but yeah, I guess Mike Evans deserves some consideration there. He went from making Johnny Manziel a first-round draft pick at Texas A&M to making Jameis Winston at least show flashes of stardom. And now with Bruce Arians, maybe he is in store to blow up a little bit this season. But, yeah, I don't think you would reasonably put Mike Evans ahead of Nuke Hopkins or probably most of the any of the other guys we talked about.
I think the only other guy I can think of that you would potentially throw in that mix would be T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah, definitely productive. If not, although given his number of catches, that kind of I was about to say, you know, he feels a little two dimensional to me compared to the other guys in, you know, high traffic catches, 50-50 balls, all that kind of stuff. But obviously the numbers are hard to argue against. He's awfully dynamic.
Certainly, certainly. So if we return back to the Texans, what do you think of Deshaun Watson in terms of, is he the best in the AFC South at his position?
Best in the AFC South. I think that, one, Nick Foles is a great story and a hero for 2 centuries at least in Philadelphia. I don't know why this is true, but it's hard to argue that this isn't true, that some human beings, some professional athletes are only good when they wear a certain uniform. I don't know why that is the case.
No, but that's true. You know, yeah.
I mean, Nick Foles was good in the Eagles uniform, and it was with Chip Kelly too. It wasn't just it wasn't the current regime. He was great with Chip Kelly too, and yet when he goes anywhere else, he's no good. So I think it's overly optimistic to assume that this guy is your savior in a division that, as much as we say it's defense first, that kind of paradoxically means that if all the defenses are all more or less now keeping up with each other, keeping up with the Joneses, that all 4 are going to have really strong defenses, then what's going to win the games and win the division ultimately is who can create a few splash plays over the course of 60 minutes in 16 games. And, you know, Leonard Fournette is fine and he's a banger, but I don't think that that's enough in Jacksonville.
No.
T.Y. Hilton, Andrew Luck, Marlon Mack. Okay, now that's something. And, you know, the Derrick Henry phenomenon that he, you know, breaks off these highlight reel runs. We still don't know that this guy is capable of doing it, you know, for 16 weeks or even for half a season, carrying 20, you know, getting 25 or 30 touches a game. Now they added a little more splash to their offense, so maybe they'll be different. Marcus Mariota is not the guy to me. I don't believe, you know, people always say, why do coaches force quarterbacks out of their comfort zone? Why, if you have a quarterback who runs well, why would you make him stay in the pocket? There are, in fact, quarterbacks, there are human beings who don't want to do that stuff. And from what I've been told, Marcus Mariota is one of those guys. It's not that the coaches don't want him to run. It's that Marcus Mariota doesn't like running. He wants to stay in the pocket throw because it's safer there. That's bad. That's not great to hear from your franchise QB. So I would put him at number 2 now. I mean, Andrew Luck had the one lousy season, but injuries were a concern there. After that, though, I mean, he's been a double-digit winner in every season he's been in the NFL. That can't be a fluke. I do think I'm a little annoyed by the fact, and always was, that before he ever put on the Colts uniform, he was put into the Pro Football Hall of Fame by too many people. And so I'm a little bit, do something first. But he has, at this point now, it's hard to, now you would just be a vapid cynic to say Andrew Luck isn't in fact great. He's got gunslinger all over him. He definitely throws bad picks that require him to rally the team to overcome his bad decisions earlier in the game. But I think he's still the best. But I definitely, and this isn't 2020 hindsight, and I guess a lot of people would say, well, obviously Patrick Mahomes is going to be the better long-term NFL QB. But I definitely knew in the moment at that draft when the Bears announced 3 years ago that they were taking Mitch Trubisky first overall, I knew that was a mistake. I knew that much. I knew, what are you doing? And I remember talking to Deshaun Watson and saying, I think the Texans just got the best quarterback in the draft, and he agreed, which was surprising. No, I would expect that he would say that. But Mahomes, notwithstanding, you know, depending on what kind of the way the offense runs, I don't think it's necessarily 100% true that Patrick Mahomes in any system is definitely better than Deshaun Watson. And that's about as high a praise as I can give a young QB that, you know, given a style that a certain NFL team might want to play, Deshaun Watson might be preferable. But to answer your initial question, he's the second best in the division, and I think that's pretty clear cut that he couldn't go any lower than that.
No, and I think give him some more time, a couple more years, especially if they can solidify that offensive line, and we might be talking about him at the top. But I think for the moment, I can certainly see that. So if we look ahead at the 2019 season for the Texans, as you mentioned earlier, O'Brien, you feel he's perhaps underrated by a lot of people, especially considering the lack of success, I guess you could say, from a lot of other Belichick products. A lot of Texans fans have been very unhappy with O'Brien and the way he plays, his sort of inability to move on from the run on occasion and to stick with that on occasion. Definitely frustrates a lot.
That's an absolutely valid criticism. I will say, though, yes, it's two different things. And it's, as much as the statistics will work against me on this, when I point out that the Patriots are in a perennially crummy division, and people say, well, look at the record that those other AFC teams have when they go outside the division. It's pretty high. But for the Patriots' sake, they never have to think. Think about this in the Tom Brady era there. They've never had to think, well, do we have a roster built to win our division?
Yeah.
And most other teams do have to factor that in. That is the, you know, you could want to play a certain kind of ball, but if you do, you know, like we keep saying, the AFC South is now all about defense. It's so defense heavy. So I can kind of see Bill O'Brien saying, like, we just want to stay close, and get one of those splash plays from one of our special talents, and that's going to be the difference for us. But is that a winning philosophy come January? That's where it becomes an issue. You know, that's not enough to beat the Patriots. That's not enough to vanquish the offensive powerhouses outside the division.
No, and I think that's something that a lot of fans in particular will bring up, is that it isn't enough to beat the powerhouses come the playoffs. Because, I mean, he only has, what, one victory in the playoffs with the Texans. It's just, his record is not good enough. I mean, look back to last season.
You're right.
Obviously, last season, they were completely outplayed by the Colts. Go back to when Brian Hoyer was in at quarterback. It was 30-0 against the Chiefs. I mean, they've always been far too careful in the playoffs. So my big question is, with so many Texans on his back, and so many Texans fans, rather, on his back, if the Texans don't win the division this year or even make the playoffs, do you see him here beyond 2019?
I think that's a reasonable question at this point, because last year, it is funny how much we're prisoners of the last moment. And, you know, for all the nice storylines with the Texans, the meager showing in the wild card round with the Colts, you know, especially with it being the Colts, that kind of exposed sort of in sharp relief the trajectory, or you could perceive it that way. I'm not saying that is the reality, but you could very easily say, like, the Texans aren't that good, huh? Or Deshaun Watson's not that great, is he? Based on one 60-minute ball game,
yeah.
You know, and so it's unfair to do that, but if you couple that game and the indulgence of Tom Savage for a little too long, and, like you say, the overarching offensive philosophy, and a season that ends outside the playoffs, I could imagine the Texans getting a little scutchy and trying to move on. But again, as you find out pretty much every year, there's Black Monday where they let the head coaches go, and you wonder some of the time if some of these teams considered who was out there to replace that guy. Like, yeah, okay, we want to move on from this guy, but who are you moving on to? That's really just as important. It's not a matter that you just want to wash your hands of somebody. You better have a good option. But you know what? In the region that you're in, there's some nice college coaches that might be ready to make the jump a year from now. And who knows? Maybe Urban Meyer will a year off of football, we'll want to make the leap up to pro football. So maybe Jim Harbaugh, and, you know, who knows what happens after this year. But, yeah, it's an interesting point you make. I would think that missing the playoffs this year with what remains of J.J. Watt's prime and Jadeveon Clowney and uncertainty there,
yeah.
and Deshaun Watson now, and you know, the high-end pieces that the team has at this point, it would be disappointing if they didn't make the playoffs and actually make a little bit of hay there.
So if you had to call it, if you're up on the spot right now, much as I'm doing, if you had to call it right now, who would you say is going to win the AFC South?
The Colts. And I say that because for all the Chiefs talk, they, you know, whether Mahomes regresses or not, just the style of play, it was sort of a perfect storm, which isn't to diminish what he did, which is one of the all-time great individual seasons by a quarterback, no matter what the circumstance. But we don't know with Tyreek Hill what's going to be. We don't know about that run game. The defense has improved, which means that they're not going to be in as many shootouts, which means that that will diminish that offense just a little bit. I think they'll come back to the pack a little bit in that division. And the Chargers will continue their rise. So I'm not as high on the Chiefs this year. And then everybody's talking Browns, and that seems silly to me. I don't want to be a vapid cynic, but can they do something first before they
do everything?
Freddie Kitchens has never coached an NFL football game, and yet he's definitely the guy who's going to manage all those big egos. I mean, they Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham might be longtime friends, but even back at LSU, they didn't exactly love the lack of targets because of the other one's presence out on the field, and that was back at LSU. How's that going to go in the NFL now? And Freddie Kitchens, again, is the guy who has to manage all that. That seems like a lot. And then, you know, you're cuckoo at this point. Like I said about J.J. Watt, you'd have to be loco to throw dirt on the Patriots at this point, but the team I as of now, we'll see how everything goes through training camp and injuries and all that stuff, but I think the Colts are the team to beat in the AFC. I mean, their defense should be really, really tough, and Andrew Luck is, it just feels like it's time for him to make that deep playoff run this season, and he's surrounded now by a bunch of different kinds of weapons, and like you mentioned, the great offensive line and everything else. So I think things are adding up for the Colts to have a really good season this year, so I'll take them to win it. But I do think you guys are, again, just like I did with the quarterback rankings, I'll put the Texans as the second place team with a really strong shot at getting the wild card.
Unfortunately, as much as it pains me to say this, I agree. I do think the Colts are the team to beat in the AFC South now. They're just too strong heading into this season over the whole board, as opposed to in sections like the Texans are.
I mean, they're not even dependent on Justin Houston. He's like a luxury item for them to have added.
Exactly.
He doesn't have to be an every down guy. He doesn't even have to play every week. But when he's on the field, he is one of the most unheralded stars in the NFL. And I'm not sure exactly why, because the lines are blurred. It's not like, oh, he's not in a big enough market. The NFL, the market doesn't generally matter so much. It's weird that he isn't a bigger star, but man, he can dominate. And again, he's just a luxury item that they've thrown onto that defense. So yeah, they ought to be scary. The one thing the Texans could do that would please me to no end, and I've talked with, you know, guys like Arian Foster and other guys who are longtime Texans guys, and there was some buzz that they should adopt the Oilers uniforms, which I would,
absolutely,
by the way, sign off on tomorrow. It'd be wonderful if they would do that. But short of them doing that, I would like for them to at least go back to the Red Sox. They used to do those. I just talked to David Carr today, whose name I'm sure you're familiar with, and, you know, the first quarterback and everything else, and he agrees too. I don't understand why the blue socks with the blue pants. It don't look right. Get back to the Red Sox. It was splashy. If you could make that happen, then I would consider the season a success.
I have to admit, I completely agree about the Oilers uniforms. I mean, they were easily the best uniforms in the NFL. Let's be perfectly honest here. But as much as we would all like that, I can't see that happening, unfortunately. Despite, let's be honest, JJ and DeAndre have both said they'd like that to happen. And we've seen Deshaun also wearing an Oilers uniform in the past. But
this is that has to matter. And by the way, The Cleveland Browns are the Cleveland Browns in name, but they literally moved. They're not even the same team. It's if there were any justice, the Baltimore Ravens, if they had dignity, they would have said, like, okay, we're not the Browns anymore. From now on, we're the Baltimore Purples, and we'll just leave everything behind there to kind of honor where they came from. The Oilers left. They're the Tennessee Titans anymore. That would be rude to begrudge Houston those uniforms. I don't think they would stand in the way of it. So then what's the holdup at this point? Let's get back to that glorious powder blue. I hated the Oilers. I'm from Pittsburgh. I said it. I sat in two straight AFC title games in Three River Stadium as a wee lad. I watched those teams. I watched Earl Campbell and Dan Pastorini and all those guys. I remember it very well. That said, I still, because I, like you, clearly am an aesthete, and I know a good uniform when I see one. Let's get those uniforms back.
I'm so glad to hear someone else agree with me on that the Texans, they need their history back as far as I'm concerned, but I think we might be fighting a losing battle on that front, unfortunately. And just to bring up one more topic that you mentioned a minute ago, you alluded to, obviously the Browns, they look like they could be a car crash waiting to happen. We don't know at this point in time, but with so many big egos, a bit like the Jaguars last year, we don't know what's going to happen with them. Another team I'm really looking forward to this year in terms of it could just completely blow up in their faces is the Oakland Raiders. With Vontaze Burfict, obviously AJ Brown, Antonio Brown, sorry, and then Richie Incognito joining as well. That's a lot of ego in one room.
Well, I keep saying it. If NFL Films and the NFL in general doesn't settle on the Raiders for Hard Knocks, we riot. You know, that's the only way we can get the message through. We have to take to the streets to ensure that, because that's their value this season, the Raiders. I don't know. Things are in limbo. They're moving to Vegas.
Exactly.
You know, Antonio Brown, as much as you know, obviously, as I praised earlier, his talent and everything, he feels like his lesser angels, at least in the last 5 months, kind of got the better of him. And I fear, if I had to predict, I think he's headed in a TO kind of direction here. I think he's, you know, plays for, you know, a couple or a few teams over the next, over the second half of his career, kind of moves around, and he's made it fairly clear that it's about the touches he gets.
Yes.
Not, he might be placated by some wins early, but I think that, and I just don't think that's a recipe. You do. It's a funny balance, though, because I do think the same people who denigrate Odell Beckham or Antonio Brown and say, oh, they want the touches. Well, you know who else wanted the touches? Jerry Rice. When they won the Super Bowl, he was mad. Because he wasn't, he didn't get to say, I'm going to Disneyland. He felt slighted by that, and he was mad about that. You just won the Super Bowl, man. Walter Payton.
I was just about to bring him up as well.
Didn't get the carry over Fridge Perry, which obviously was an injustice, but in the locker room, finally, after so many years on bum Bears teams, he wins the Super Bowl, and all he could do was mope about it. The point is, high-end pro athletes have big egos. And so they want the ball a lot. However, there's some line there where I feel like Antonio Brown crossed. And I think so. I'm kind of with you. I think the Raiders could be a little of a mess. And also, they keep Derek Carr for 2019. But, you know, this could be sort of it sure shapes up like a proving year for him. They're not going to continue on with him if he doesn't play well, and if that gets sideways, you know, 6 weeks in. And by the way, look up the Raiders' schedule. They start with not a powerhouse, but a very good defense that can rush the passer in Denver. And then after that, their next five or six games are rugged. A good team would struggle to be 3-3. The Raiders are very likely to be about 2-4, 2-5 in the blink of an eye. And then how's that mess going to look if I'm right about that?
And how's Brown going to react to that as well? That's something else I think is going to be worth looking out.
Oh, I mean, Burfict and Incognito.
Exactly. I'm really looking forward to that, I must admit. So I like to close out my podcast by throwing the guests off just a little bit with a couple of questions that are slightly off topic. Justin Reed said recently that one of the things he plans to work on with the Texans this summer are the celebrations. Have you got any recommendations for him? Perhaps some personal favorites?
Well, I was at the Super Bowl where Doug Baldwin pooped the football, and I personally thought it was a little untoward, but nevertheless, it amused me. I thought that one was pretty good. I consider myself to be clever too, but I don't really have a great one in mind. So I suggest going back to the future, going, you can never go wrong going old school. I say do like Billy White Shoes Johnson. That he really is the guy who made end zone celebrations famous with his shaking of his knees and his little dance that he would do. It's very retro, but he did it with the Houston Oilers, and therefore it makes all the sense in the world to bring it back as a local homage to one of the pigskin legends of pro football in Houston. I say do that.
I think so as well, and I definitely think looking to the past is the way to go, because my favorite from last season was the electric slide. That was definitely my favorite.
Yeah, that was good, yeah.
So, speaking of obviously legendary players, I was at the Andre Johnson and Jason Witten's induction into the Texas Sports Hall of Fame not too long ago, where Witten actually mentioned that he and Johnson trained together for the Texans before the draft that year. What do you think would have happened with Witten had he joined the Texans instead of the Cowboys?
Ooh. Well, he did benefit from some great quarterbacks over the years. I'm trying to think of what his window was exactly. He had Romo in the Dak. Was he there with Bledsoe and Drew Henson and all those years? I don't remember. I'm trying to think, because I always try to do that math of who's the star and who is benefiting from being in the orbit of a star in a certain system there. I think Witten is one of those guys who you cannot say definitively would have been a star no matter where he landed. I think he definitely got into a good spot there, and has been a part of some good run games, which opens things up for him, and been supported by some high-end pass catchers, which further opens up the middle of the field for him. I'm going to say not as good. How about that as an answer? my final answer is not as good. Probably not even a Hall of Famer. How about that?
Oh, there we go. That's going to irritate a few people I know, but I can completely understand your logic there, I must admit. So finally, the text.
Well, listen, when you can't make a definitive call, you may as well say the one that will get more. So that's what I've done here.
The Texans have a few duos now to admire. Look at Clowney and Watt, DeSean and DeAndre, for example. If you could pick one historic NFL duo at their prime to improve this current Texans team, who would you pick and why?
Any duo?
Any duo. Any era.
Sheesh.
I told you, I like to throw people off course.
Well, you succeeded. because this is too broad for me, again, I'm going to think Houston. And I'm going to go with, even though I can't think of his name, what was the fullback's name? Oh, you had Rob Carpenter was one. How about that? I'll go Rob Carpenter and Earl Campbell.
I think
that would be it. If you threw Earl Campbell in that backfield, yikes.
That would be amazing.
How about if I give you Earl Campbell and I'll give you Ken Burrow, who was the Oilers' great wide receiver back then. If I give you those two guys, to go along with Duke Hopkins. Give Deshaun another weapon, big target in Ken Burrow, and give him a rugged big eight back that Deshaun will. I mean, the havoc that those two could wreak running some RPO stuff I'm going to put it in Earl Campbell's belly, or I might just run around the edge myself. That would devastate defenses. It's kind of like, since you're in Dallas, I'll make the point, and it sounds like what I've been saying for the last 18 months or so may actually come to pass there this year with a more clever play caller in Kellen Moore in Dallas. I when Dak runs some of that RPO stuff, which they just don't do very often, but periodically you see him do it, that is that's horrifying if you're in that front seven. Wait, I either have to run into Zeke Elliott or I have to spy on Dak, and if he keeps the ball, he's a giant himself. I don't want to run into him either. Imagine if it was Deshaun Watson with his wheel and Earl Campbell back there in the same backfield.
Imagine an offense of Hopkins, Burrow, Campbell, Kiki Cutie, and then Deshaun Watson. I think that is absolutely terrifying.
I mean, we could play this game all day. Plenty of good options. But I think that's, I guess to where we started, if I gave you Mark Haynes and Lester Hayes from the Raiders, who shut down the Washington Redskins in Super Bowl 18, took away their pass catchers for pretty much the entire game. If I gave you those two, I'm sure you guys would be feeling pretty good.
Definitely.
About 19 too.
Well, Dave, thank you very much. It's been an absolute joy to speak to you. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
My last name is how you track me down, at Damashek, the Dave Damashek football program at the NFL. I do any number of podcasts about any number of subjects. So probably best look for me on Twitter, where I promote all those things shamelessly.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. I've been your host, Anthony Wood, once again. Follow me at @AR_WoodNFL. And follow us, of course, at the Texans Wire. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.